Welcome to a special edition of the DART Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Anna Fife. Anna is Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives for the Batten Institute here at the Darden School of Business, and she is also a Darden alum. Anna and I recently connected to talk more about her background, how she decided to pursue an MBA, what led her to Darden, what brought her back to Darden for her current role, the work that she does with the Batten Scholars Program, and so much more. A quick note, if this conversation is helpful for you, please like this episode and subscribe so that you never miss an update. And remember, you can always check the episode description for links to Darden blogs, social channels, and more resources for tips, insights, and stories about the Darden experience. And now, without further ado, my interview with Anna Fife. Anna, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brett. It's so great to be here.
It's great to have you here. How's everything going? How are you doing?
Good. It's almost spring, it feels like, here in Charlottesville. So that always, you know, puts a spring in your step, and to see the sunshine outside and the beautiful grounds is always nice to come into work.
I know. The weather later this week is supposed to be pretty warm. I'm trying to embrace the idea that it may be spring, although I fear the late March backlash where it gets cold again. I don't know. Is it okay to believe that spring has arrived?
No, I think there's that chart of the false spring that always lands in DC. I think Charlottesville's in the same boat.
Okay. All right. Well, we won't speak it yet. We won't say it out loud. So, well, thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Before we get started, get into the sort of the substance of our conversation, we're going to talk a lot about the Batten Scholars Program today. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit more about you. Tell us about you. Who are you and what's your background?
Sure. Well, thanks, Brett. So I'm Anna Fife. And again, I'm honored to be on the pod. I've heard so many great guests over the time you've been doing this. And so I'm the Senior Director for Strategic Initiatives at the Batten Institute, which is the Batten Institute for Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology down at Darden. And so we have a broad mandate and get to work in some pretty exciting areas on behalf of the school. I'm also a 2014 alum of the residential program, which is partially what drew me back here. Had a great experience here during my time, which is coming up on 10 years, which is exciting. And it's fun to be back and to kind of see what has changed and what hasn't. And part of what makes Darden great is kind of that continued connection, I'd say. And then I guess otherwise, I'm from Central Virginia originally, so it feels like home in many ways. I spent a lot of time in the DC area post-grad, and so appreciate kind of all that's going on up there in that important part of our country and an important part of the Darden community as well.
All right. Well, what attracted you to your role, the Batten Institute?
Sure. So I started shortly after our new executive director, Omar Garriott, who's a former guest on this podcast as well, started. And so I was able to join as he's kind of thought about what might be different in the Batten future. And so my role is one that was newly formed to take on both some legacy projects and kind of bring new bandwidth to them, but also to think about what are some of the programs we might get started. And so I think that's an exciting place to get to work. And so my career has spanned the nonprofit sector as well as government. And so higher ed was a new industry for me in that way, but I think brings a lot of those pieces together, being able to have an impact and be able to think kind of in a mission-oriented way, but just with a new constituency, and that being students and graduate students at that. And so that was kind of what brought me back, was kind of thinking in a new way about how to have kind of an influence on the world and the future you want to see. And here it's to do that through the students we get to work with.
As a student at Darden, did you do much with the Batten Institute? Was it something that was on your radar?
Not as much, actually. I did a lot with the Institute for Business and Society. So I was familiar with the centers model that we have here at Darden, the Centers of Excellence, of which the Batten Institute's one, the Institute for Business and Society, or IBIS, and then the Mayo Center for Asset Management. And so when I was here, I was excited to get involved in those areas. I was making the switch from government. I worked on Capitol Hill into the nonprofit sector. And I wanted to really work at the places where business and kind of the social sector collide. That was kind of the theory of the case that I came in with. And so I interned at a community foundation out in Boulder, Colorado, with support of the Darden Nonprofit Internship Fund, and then helped get started something called the Tri-Sector Leaders Program, which is just, I think, had its 10th year, maybe its 9th anniversary, which is a program that does cohorts of graduate students across law, the Batten School on Main Grounds, which is the School for Public Policy, not to be confused with the Batten Institute, although it often is, as well as Darden. And so those were some of the things I was able to get involved with. I worked a lot with Net Impact, and I did the Board Fellows Program, which is board shadowing that happens with area nonprofits. But the Batten Institute itself was not on my radar, but on my partner's. I went here with my then fiance, now husband, and he was in kind of the venture capital startup space. And so kitchen table conversations have always been around that place of thinking about kind of startups and impact in that realm. And he's been doing venture and some other things recently as well.
Can we talk a little bit more about your MBA journey? So you mentioned that Sure. you worked in government, Capitol Hill, and ended up at Darden. So how did you decide to pursue an MBA?
That I still sometimes wonder that. I was very split between doing a public policy degree and an MBA program. And that's, I think, some of that Venn diagram, which you knew better than me, but it certainly is on leadership and kind of enterprise thinking. And so I'd been lucky to work for Senator Mark Warner, who's the Virginia senator in his first term. And when you join as a new senator or congressperson, I thought there was kind of more of a playbook. I assumed I was going into this kind of established operation. You know, it's the Senate, it must be very formal, et cetera. And I was surprised to learn, as kind of that founding team, that there really isn't a playbook. You kind of go in and you have to figure it all out. And so I was one of the most junior members of the team, myself and two other staff assistants. And we were in a windowless basement office at the Dirksen Building, for those in D.C. And you just looked at this pile of mail and the two front phones out front. They're like, all right, you guys figure out what to do. And so that was kind of day one. And from there, we had to build a lot of the systems in the office and how to operate and how to get back to constituents and how to help the legislative staff, how to help the chief of staff, et cetera. So I held a bunch of different roles in my kind of 4 years there. But part of the kind of thing I got to see was that it takes a lot of operations and it takes a lot of kind of thinking ahead of the structure to make all these big things happen, whether it's legislative bills or work with constituents or some of the outreach we were doing. And kind of that infrastructure really mattered. And so offices that were kind of doing well had that structure and those kind of smooth operations in place. And it didn't hurt working for Senator Warner, who was a business guy, that he kind of ran our office more in that mode. We had weekly reports and he would often tell us, you know, what gets measured gets done. And you had to kind of report at the end of every week of kind of what you were working on and how many pieces of mail we've gotten out or, you know, what you'd been able to advance on the legislative front. And so that was that kind of insight for me, that wanting to understand, you know, how do you operate an organization, whether it's a business or government or nonprofit, and where do you get that perspective? And so that took me to, I think, a general management kind of focused business school and one that was run on the case method, because it allowed someone like me, who'd only used Excel sheets to organize events, I'd never put numbers in it, to come to a business school and still be able to get up to speed quickly and learn how to navigate, you know, finances and learn how to think about a budget differently and think about kind of planning in a different way than I'd been able to do before. I will say, I thank my learning team. I thank others that kind of brought me along with them, because Mark Lipson, my finance professor in the core, because they really can bring people along that don't have that exposure or experience beforehand. But I think that's not everybody, but certainly there are many that come to Darden who've not had that same level of exposure. And it's great to be able to still be a part of the classroom. So I think that's what got me here. That's probably a longer story than you were expecting, but it was that kind of insight and trying to find, like, how do you make sure that folks that want to do a lot of good work or that have a vision they want to see in the world, what are the pieces that they need to make that happen? And some of it's that kind of operational structure or that leadership view that needs to be in place to allow the vision they have to manifest.
Well, I'm curious, I want to go back a little bit further in your story. Did you always know you wanted to work on Capitol Hill?
I did. And my story is maybe, well, I shouldn't say I did. I had a lot of exposure to it because I grew up and my dad was in Congress when I was a kid. And so he was elected when I was just two. And so to me, it was normal. I joke that I'm the youngest of four and the only one that went into politics. So I also think that maybe I didn't know something that my siblings did. But so he was in office till I was about 11. And so my earliest exposure is to thinking about government as a force for good. You know, back in those days in the 80s and 90s, our phone number was in the phone book. So I had to learn how to answer the phones at home when someone might have a constituent problem and write it down and make sure the message got to my dad or his office. And so you'd go to the grocery store and be recognized, et cetera. It was certainly a different era, but it made me appreciate, having gone to so many of those events and seen so much of how it happened, that just the ability that you can have to help people. Again, a lot has changed in that time. But for me, I felt that the lever of change that government has and the ability it can have to impact people's lives was something I wanted to be closer to. And so I kind of went to college with that in mind and also graduated in 2008, which folks would know is a pretty impactful election year. So kind of jumped on a campaign and was able to then go into Capitol Hill from that point.
Yeah, my understanding of what the campaign experience is like is it's pretty intense. They ask a lot of the staff
yeah.
during these campaigns.
I was lucky in that Senator Warner was running away with it at the time. And so he was several points up. So my campaign experience, I think we got to go home at like 7 or 7:30 p.m. And so if anyone is listening, has been on a campaign, they would say that's not really normal. So we were fortunate, but we were able to help some of the folks down ballot and other races. And because you really are at that point running on a ticket. And so we were trying to do what we could to support others. And certainly Senator Warner would never want to say that we were taking our foot off the gas, and we weren't. But it maybe wasn't that same pressure cooker that other campaigns run. So I don't know that I got that full experience from my 2008 run.
So you come to Darden. You mentioned you didn't have a ton of background with some of these things that you were learning about.
Yeah.
What was that experience like as a Darden student?
Sure. Trying to put myself back there, as I said, it's longer ago than I'd like to admit some days. It really is about figuring out, you know, what do you know? Where do you feel strongest? You know, where do you need help? And figuring out how to get that help, and not being, whether it's proud or nervous to figure out how to get that help, right? And I think that was a big learning curve that I had, is that nobody can do it at all. You know, there's so much work, and that's why there's this learning team structure, that you have to figure out how to work as a team. I'm sure there's some students that can kind of do it all on their own, but I maybe wasn't them. But kind of figuring out, how do you learn from others, and how do you rely on others, and how do you then give back when you have the opportunity to, was a big part of that. And again, that learning team structure, that that section structure, figuring out how you can work collaboratively was really important. I also found the case method as a liberal arts major to be really interesting, because you're reading and kind of soaking in on the case before you get there and starting to really think about it. Some other things I'd say that kind of come back to me is that, you know, the cold call is stressful. Everyone knows about the cold call. And for whatever reason, you're just sitting there kind of nervous about it. I can't always figure out why it was so nerve-wracking at the time. These are your friends at this point, right? But you don't have to always have the right answer. I think sometimes it's the folks that either have the wrong answer but are able to let people learn alongside them and be willing to be that wrong answer, or someone who asks the really insightful question that can help bring the conversation forward. But just sitting and hoping you have the right answer all the time maybe isn't learning. And so realizing that was probably an important realization for me. But there's also this kind of, they say kind of this point at which you break down a little bit and then you get built back up, and kind of knowing that that's part of the journey is important too, of knowing that, yes, there might be a point where I kind of doubt myself or I doubt what I'm able to do, but to feel confident that you will be built back up and you will find those skills and the people around you to help you through. And to reach out for help when you need it. So I'd say those are some of the insights I'd have on that kind of earliest part of the journey. The other thing I'd add is just making sure you do maybe the mental work ahead of time to have a clarity around your goal, to know what you're there for. Because when there's so much thrown at you and so many different opportunities you can pursue, you can kind of get pulled in a lot of different directions. But having some sense of a North Star, even if that may change over time or be better informed over time, is going to help you stay honest to kind of where you want to go. And so I think having some of that sense of purpose was important for me and for others I saw that maybe didn't get kind of routed in a different direction, have to come kind of back to their main path.
Yeah, I appreciate all of that. A lot of it resonates with advice that's been shared here on the podcast. So particularly, you know, sort of accepting the sort of journey that you're on here, and that, you know, it's not going to be linear. Like, there's going to be, you move up, you move back, you know, you're going to learn some things. Maybe you feel like you don't know so much at one point, but you're going to get past that. I mean, I think being accepting of that, particularly for really high performing people, can be really challenging.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I think that's, again, it's kind of learning to be on that journey with other people was part of that for me. And again, I was at Darden with my partner, so it felt very much true that I had someone else that I could, you know, lean on even at dinner time or after our learning teams closed. But realizing there are other people going through that at the same time was meaningful as well.
Making that decision to where to go to business school with your partner, did y'all always know that you were going to come to Darden? Was UVA always high on your list?
No, I mean, I think for us, and everyone has different strategies for this, right? For us, it was that we wanted to be in the same city. And so we applied to programs where we thought we could be in the same place. And so actually, I think Darden was the only one on our list where we would have been in the same program. But that was kind of how we tackled it, was making sure that we kind of were at least geographically in the same area. Well, that, and it was nice to have someone to do applications with. I remember many hours sitting on a coffee shop in Capitol Hill, plugging away at our essays and whatnot. And so having someone to kind of keep me accountable was really helpful too. But it's hard. I mean, there's trade-offs that anytime you're in a relationship, I'd argue you have to make, of maybe when one person gets to lead on the decision or one person has to follow. And it doesn't stop with kind of coming to school. It's kind of figuring that out as recruiting or or starting a family. I mean, there's many junctures in your life where you have to have those conversations with a partner of kind of what makes the best sense for both of us together. And that's not always everybody getting 100% of everything. And that's, I'm 11 years out of marriage too. So that's, I'm at that point in our marriage where we kind of figure out like, how do we both kind of figure out what works best for us and our family. And that's always a conversation.
Well, Anna, let's talk a little bit about your current role here and your work with the Batten Scholar. So for folks who may be new to this conversation, what is the Batten Institute? How do you explain this Center for Excellence?
Sure. Well, thanks for that prompt too. It's always fun to get to talk a little bit about the Institute's work. And one is that we're kind of a longstanding part of the Darden ecosystem, both the Batten itself and the Centers for Excellence that sits alongside really of the core kind of faculty and curricular experience to amplify and enhance, I'd argue, what happens at Darden in these specific areas, right? And so for us at Batten, that's entrepreneurship, innovation, and more recently, tech. And so we were founded with a large gift. So we're an endowed institute to really focus on these areas. And that includes scholarships, which is, we'll talk about in a bit, a core part of our work. That's student programming, which is a lot of what we do. And then thought leadership. And that's really amplifying some of the research that faculty is doing and bringing it to kind of a practitioner audience. There's also kind of a part of convening to that and reaching out in new ways. And so again, those three issue areas are what drive us, but they're broad issue areas. So we do have initiatives focused on different pieces, whether that's sustainability or there's an AI initiative right now, design thinking, et cetera, that have been stood up to really clarify the focus on specific areas and to have some of that, whether it's student focus or thought leadership focus, kind of live.
All right. Well, you mentioned the scholarship program. So tell us a little bit more about the Batten Scholars and
sure.
Exactly what that is.
Yeah, so the Batten Scholarship Program is the one kind of written essay within the application. So those of you going through the application may have seen that or kind of be aware of it. And it's a longstanding scholarship program of which there are many great scholarships at Darden and in the different formats. But it's one that's, again, closely aligns with those three core issue areas of entrepreneurship, innovation, and tech. And so there's an essay that kind of asks about your past experience in one of those areas and your future goals. And so what we want to do is kind of find students that have a shared interest in those spaces and help them on their journey by taking part of that kind of financial burden of the higher education off their plate. And so it's a real big opportunity that I think we get to have to really influence a student's experience and for us to meet a lot of great students that way. And then because of the number of students who are involved, I think right now we have 28 across all the classes and programs. It's an opportunity for those students to get to know each other, to kind of share a little bit about their path and where they're going and to forge new connections that way. We're also lucky and something that we're hoping to continue to build on over time is that we have an alumni base of Batten Scholars that have gone through since kind of the first years in the mid-2000s. And so there's some great alums, including a couple who are adjunct and visiting professors at Darden who are part of that as well.
You mentioned this sort of in passing, but for our listeners who are just learning about this scholarship, it is open to full-time MBA students as well as part-time and executive MBA students. For the full-time MBA students, it's a full scholarship. For our part-time and executive MBA students, it's a partial scholarship, typically in the range of maybe $25,000 to $30,000. It is a very competitive scholarship. You want to talk a little bit about what the process looks like? You mentioned this additional essay that people write, but there's also another interview. Just curious. Want to share more about that?
No, thanks, Brett, for teeing that up. One, I will say that depending on when you're listening to this, always check our website, because in case anything changes, go to the Batten Institute or in the admissions website, and that'll have the more current information in case in 2045 someone is listening to this. But I'd also say that the important things to keep in mind is kind of telling us about you and your goals, what you've done so far in that essay, and kind of where you want to go. So that's kind of the first piece. And from that essay, we're able to work with our admissions partners in identifying some folks for an interview, which will be with the selection committee comprised mostly of Batten Institute staff. We get to meet folks through those interviews, which now happen virtually. And that's also because we have folks from all over the world. We're lucky to have this kind of international contingent. And so we want to make it accessible to everyone. And then from the interview, we're able to hear about their goals, learn about some of their history, and select a cohort and get them to meet one another once those rounds are finished, and help them kind of welcome and bring them into Darden. But yes, it is a competitive scholarship program, of which there are a couple at Darden, and some that are named and some that go through kind of a different process. But anyone that has questions about financial aid, I would say should talk to you, Brett, rather than me. I get to see one small piece of it. But I think our main goal at Darden is to make it accessible for people who see this in their future, and that there are different paths, whether it's the Batten Scholarship or others, that might be better aligned to individual candidates.
And as you mentioned before, the website has a lot of detail here. The missions team is always happy to help as well. But you mentioned this kind of cohort of Batten Scholars. How do you work with this group of people? How do you engage with them?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and one that we're building on. So I started about 9 months ago in my role. And part of that was to be able to, again, provide that bandwidth to offer more of kind of direct engagement and hopefully over time, more of a community and cohort experience for the Batten Scholars. I'll say I'm learning in my 9 months that it's challenging. Darden students are busy. And so we want to be very mindful of how we build in a program that's already on top of things that they already have going on, whether it's personally through class or curricularly, right? So that's one thing we think a lot about is kind of what unique value add could we have? And I think the unique value is really bringing this group of people together. If you're at Darden, there's a lot of different communities that you're a part of, whether it's your clubs, whether it's your learning team, whether it's your section. And so this is a group of people that have kind of raised their hand prior to coming to Darden with an interest in these three areas. They might be on a different path, but there's at least kind of this core interest of aspiring in entrepreneurship. Maybe it's to found your own venture. Maybe it's a different side of entrepreneurship and innovation, thinking differently about starting new things, whether it's inside of a company or something outside of that. And then same in tech, kind of really, are you a hard technologist? Have you built things? Are you an engineer coming in to try to grow in your career and kind of think about tech differently? So how do we bring those people together so that they can kind of meet each other, maybe have exposure to speakers, maybe just have the opportunity to convene and discuss? Maybe it's additional resources that might be helpful to them, whether it's kind of advising or mentorship that they might be asking for. That's kind of how we've been thinking about it. But again, I've sometimes realized in the reality of a Darden schedule, we want to make sure that this is something truly value add, especially for those doing the executive and part-time program. I know how busy you all are, full-time jobs, full-time school. Anything we do, we want to make sure is really additive to your experience. And so some of that might just be one-on-one working with someone to help them do an event or find a speaker they could pull in to meet with other Batten Scholars, et cetera.
All right. Well, let's talk about some other things going on with the Batten Institute. Is there anything that Batten has planned for the coming months that you're looking forward to?
Absolutely. So we're talking here in kind of mid-March. And so one of the things we're working on as we think about the months ahead is the Summer Incubator Program, which my colleague Jason Brewster runs. And that's the iLab Incubator that's a cross-university effort in that we're accepting students from across the university. They'll meet here at Darden. It's a new format this summer, which is going to be intensive weeks as well as kind of virtual weeks to allow folks who might be in different places to kind of come in for those intensive weeks as kind of a more typical with an accelerator or an incubator program might be happening outside of a university setting is that you're coming in to really meet with your cohort, go through this programming together at work on the off weeks and then come back together again. So that's the format that will be taking place this summer. And it's really to bring ventures together as they're kind of testing out some of their ideas. They have a minimum viable product already and they're learning how to grow those ventures. And so there'll be about 20, 25 teams this summer. For the first time, there'll be some alumni teams hopefully participating. And we'll kind of see how that group comes together. We're excited about the different speakers and the different activities that are planned. And it'll culminate with a demo night at the end of the summer of them kind of talking about their ventures and where they hope to go. And there have been some really great ventures that have come through that, Darden students and otherwise, from the engineering school, from arts and sciences, et cetera. And it's always neat to see kind of where they go, whether they change, whether they stay on that venture path. But some that I can think of last summer, there was Play Henry, which is a pickleball startup that's doing apparel and their own paddle. You have Petrichor, which is looking at kind of recycled fabrics and thinking about clothing a bit differently. You have Peter Lee Hamilton, who's a joint degree with the law school, who's working on an AI startup that he has going. Hoisan, who's working on kind of, I think it was frozen boozy treats, so kind of food. So there's a lot of different Darden ventures that do go through that program. I can't forget Erica Keough from the exec program, who's been working on her venture. I was able to meet her last summer and just hear about all they're doing kind of in the startup space as she builds her own consulting firm focused on early stage startups, et cetera. So there's a lot of great ventures that go through and then really work together to just get stronger over the course of the summer. And there's a lot of beauty in that kind of being able to be in a cohort experience, both with Darden Ventures and across UVA. Other stuff we're working on, of course, the Batten Innovation Grants Program is running right now, which are cash grants that go to to founders across the cohorts of residential, executive, and part-time to experiment with their ventures. So we're excited about that. We'll have the spring round starting up soon, and we'll get to learn alongside of them of the different experiments and other things that they're running. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I appreciate your mentioning all those student ventures. We've had a lot of those people on the podcast. We've had Play Henry. We had Wissan on here, Peter Lee Hamilton, also on the podcast. I think pretty much everybody. I'm not sure we've had Petrichor on here, so we have to do something about
get her
that,
on there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so much fun talking with the students about their ventures and their ideas, and just to kind of hear where the idea came from and how they've been able to grow or develop their idea here with all the support and resources. It's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, whether it's something you want to do forever, whether you're kind of, it's going to be your one thing, or if you're doing it alongside of a career you're already in, there's just so much opportunity to explore, I think, when you're in the Darden MBA. And it's a great exposure to both world-class professors, but also some of these experiential programs. And I'd encourage anybody who has that entrepreneurial itch or curiosity to, whether it's take a course or to kind of jump in with some of this extracurricular programming to explore it. It's a safe time to do it, in the way that, you know, there's a lot of other things going on. But if you think you might do it either as a student or in your career, it's a good opportunity to check it out and see if it's something that, whether you're a joiner or a founder yourself, you might want to do.
Well, outside of the Batten Institute, are there other things that you're looking forward to in the coming months? Anything that you have circled on your calendar?
Well, absolutely. And I should say on Batten, you know, tech too, I don't want to forget, you know, that side of the house, that there's a lot of cool stuff going on in tech that Carlos Bortoni, who's an MBA from the 2019 classes, is leading. And he's recently come on at Batten, and he's based up in DC. So hopefully folks in the other formats will see a lot of Carlos as well. But yeah, other things, of course, you know, we've got the emails that have come around Darden about graduation being around the corner, which is somewhat hard to believe, but I think it's May 18th. And so that's always a great time to see the students. Really culminate 2 years of a lot of hard work here. So excited about that. I'm not excited. I signed up for like a 6 a.m. volunteer shift, so I may rethink that. But I'm very excited about the festivities and just the chance. Springtime in Charlottesville is beautiful. Getting to be able to be back on the courtyard with some of the events with students and otherwise will be really nice. And then the TomTom Festival is one thing outside of UVA that I'm looking forward to. That'll be in April. We've got some great faculty speaking. It's kind of like Charlottesville's homegrown response to South by Southwest in some ways, where you've got these different tracks and different speakers from across the community and outside of Charlottesville speaking. And so I'm looking forward to that. That'll be in about a month now, as a good way to engage intellectually and broaden the sphere outside of UVA a little bit.
That's great. It feels like there's always something like that going on in Charlottesville, the film festival, you have the Festival of the Book. Yeah. TomTom Festival is another part of the sort of firmament there. So
April is packed, and the Entrepreneurship Cup competition is something that will be happening alongside TomTom this year. They happen to be at the same time in the calendar, where the last round of UVA's Entrepreneurship Cup, which the Batten Institute runs, will be taking place. And that's the launch competition, which is an exciting kind of pitch competition that folks can come to, but is hopefully something people will be applying to here in the next couple of weeks. To participate in that exciting program. And if you miss it this year, then next year, there are three rounds and folks can participate from across the university community, which is really exciting.
Yeah, we've had quite a few executive MBA and even maybe a few part-time MBA students participate in the Entrepreneurship Cup. And to a person, and I hear this from the full-time MBA students too, just the experience of going through it and having to make a pitch and get in front of people and answer their questions is super valuable. Even if you don't win, it's still, the process is worthwhile.
For sure. And being in this role, I've now had a chance to talk to more alums. The clarity with which they remember that pitch, you know, or that experience of having to do it, I think it stays with people. And so I do think it can, whether it's your forever thing of founding this venture or just something you want to experiment with, people have found it really valuable in different ways.
All right. Well, Anna, last question for you here. What's a piece of advice you would share with our prospective students, something that you would encourage them to consider as they think about their own MBA journeys?
Sure. I think one thing that I don't know if I made enough good use of, but I think is so true, is that when you're a student, you just have the opportunity to talk to people in an open manner, because they're so interested and invested in hoping to see you succeed. And whether that's people within, you know, UVA or your institution or others, you know, people are just willing to share things with a student to help them kind of figure things out or on their journey, or just kind of share their own story in a way that's different at other times in your life. And I think I didn't appreciate the extent to which that extends, even just the idea of considering a program, that you get that benefit. So to make good use of that, right? To think about, you know, how do I start going out to talk to people and ask them to share their story or the choices they made or advice that they give to me, and really start to bring those people in and build your network. You have that opportunity as a prospective. I'm considering this type of program. What advice would you, I see you've done it. What advice would you give to me? Or you went to this school, you know, what stays with you about it, et cetera. And then staying in touch with those people, because they can be really meaningful to your career search or just to maybe a contact you have, putting them in touch, et cetera. But that ability to start building that network in a new way, even before you come to a program, I'd ask, you know, prospective students to think about that and to consider how they can really start to explore. Because again, your ability to come in with some sort of North Star that's meaningful to you, I think can allow you to make good use of your experience and to make choices that you feel will resonate with you over time. And one of the ways you can test those assumptions and get more information is just by talking to more people. So long-winded answer, but prospective students, use that opportunity well to talk to more people and get more information that will help you on your journey.
Great advice. No issues with being long-winded. It's fantastic advice. And people really should leverage that sort of, I'm an incoming student here, or, you know, I'm getting ready to start at Darden, because people are always so excited to talk about their experience and share their experience, things that they learned, other people that you might want to think about connecting with as you go forth on your career journey. I mean, so much value comes from those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say too, having done some of the company visits and job treks, et cetera, the amount folks are willing to share about their company is always really impressive. You know, whether it's the glossy stuff that gets you headlines or the stuff that maybe they don't always want to share, you know, the tough stuff. And it's really meaningful when you get that insight in kind of real time. And so I think back to some of those visits that we did with companies and just how willing they're to really tell everything they did and every little aspect of it, and how that really informed kind of my perspective on things, or going back in the classroom and kind of better understanding what firms were doing at that time was really meaningful. And so whether it's one-on-one or these other kind of curricular experiences, whether it's a worldwide course or otherwise, it's just amazing how willing people are to share. And then, you know, the same to give that back. That's a power, and it's something you kind of have to learn to hone over time. But, you know, good networking isn't just a one-way street. It's really thinking about how you can add value and be a resource to others. So continuing to practice that, I'd say, over time is meaningful.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was great to talk with you. And thank you for sharing your story for our listeners. And if people wanted to learn a little bit more about the Batten Scholars Program, check out the website. Any other recommendations?
No, I think that's great, Brad. And as you mentioned, talk to the admissions team. They know a lot about the scholarships program. And of course, feel free to reach out to me or others at the Batten Institute. But we're excited to meet great candidates. We're excited about the incoming classes that are coming together right now. Brett, you have the hard work of doing all of that, but we're looking forward to kind of future classes, as well as celebrating, as I mentioned, in a couple, gosh, I should say weeks now, these classes that are graduating out into the world.
And that was my conversation with Anna Fife, Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives for the Batten Institute here at the Darden School of Business. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. You can reach us at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, @virginia.edu. Till next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.